This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. If you want to see selfishness in its purest form, you just try getting three-year-olds to share their toys. And of course, we hope that by the time we grow up, we've started to think more about other people and about the future. But scientists show that that's not necessarily true. And in studies, adults tend to prefer their own gain over that of others and instant gratification instead of delayed reward. A professor at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business looked into this and discovered that sometimes we can get people to think beyond themselves and invest in a better world after they're gone. It's called legacy motivation. Kim Wade Benzoni joins us now. She's an associate professor of management and a scholar at the Center on Leadership and Ethics at the Fuqua School of Business at Duke and in our studio now. Kim, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
So what were you trying to get at in your research?
Okay, well, this research program looks focuses on a class of problems that we call intergenerational dilemmas, which looks at situations in which people are faced with decisions that involve trade-offs between themselves in the present and other people in the future. I mean, what critically distinguishes this kind of context is that there's an intersection between what we call intertemporal and interpersonal dimensions. So these kinds of decisions affect the future, that's the intertemporal aspect, and they affect other people. And it's difficult, we know that it's difficult, as you mentioned, for people to defer consumption of benefits and good things in the present and save them for the future. And we know that it's difficult for people to give up beneficial things for themselves and give them to other people. So if we just extrapolate what we already know about research, looking at those two different dimensions, we might expect that if we put these two things together in the intergenerational context, that we would get a compounded effect that would work in opposition to intergenerational generosity.
So in effect, what you're saying is we kind of know we prefer ourselves to other people, and we kind of know we prefer now to later. So if you ask somebody, would you do something for somebody else later? Forget it. The bet's off. That's, you're asking way, way too much.
Right. So we know that people tend to be selfish and short-sighted. So we would expect that the prospects for future generations might be quite grim if we just kind of think about what we might expect. However, when you put these two dimensions together, what we find is that it creates conditions of special significance, which are not necessarily immediately obvious. What it does is it enables the potential for legacy motivations to develop. So you don't get legacy by acting on the behalf of your own self in the future, and you don't get legacy by having a fleeting effect on other people in the present. You really need to have both things there. And legacy motivations are so powerful. They're such a powerful social psychological benefit that people really, really are interested in, they really want, and they really need, that it can overcome the fact that they're not necessarily going to get any sort of economic or material benefit from acting on the giving up something for themselves in the present and giving something to someone else in the future.
So this legacy, this idea that if I could be known or remembered even after I'm gone as the guy who helped build that library, I might just do it. I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to check out those books, and it's not going to happen in my lifetime. But the fact that people are going to remember good old Frank as the guy who put that up, I just might give up a little of my cash to do that.
Or even just the mere fact, knowing that you have made a difference, that your life has somehow been meaningful and you have changed the world in some way, is what makes this sort of motivation so powerful.
So you mean you don't have to even have to put my name on the plaque. It doesn't have to be the Frank Stacio Memorial Library. Just my own satisfaction at knowing someday that library is going to be there. That might be enough.
That's right. That's right. So the reason why it's so powerful is that it really gets at very, very basic, fundamental, existential issues. People are worried about dying, and they want their existence to last a little bit longer. They want to extend themselves, get a little bit of symbolic immortality, which doesn't necessarily, like you said, need to be attached to one's name, although it oftentimes is. But it can even just mean, I know that my life is meaningful and I've made a difference.
So, well, let me just stop you there and ask you how you test for this. How do you get somebody, in sort of in their everyday life to be thinking about their lives of others after they're gone?
So the next step is trying to figure out how do we trigger or enact these legacy motivations. So what this research program has looked at is a variety of different factors which can actually enact legacy motivation, because you're not necessarily going to get this intergenerational beneficence if the legacy motivation is not enacted. So one of the factors that was identified early on in the research was a phenomenon that we call intergenerational reciprocity. So when people are thinking about what the previous generation did for them, if they think about the benefits or good things that the previous generation did for them, they're more likely then to think, now what should I do for future generations? So it's not a reciprocity in kind. So you present generation often doesn't have the opportunity to reciprocate backward in time, but what they can do is to pay it forward, and it can be a very generalized kind of
effect.
So this
is the ancient notions of hospitality. I open my door to the stranger because when I'm the stranger somewhere else, and they don't have to repay me, but someday I'll be repaid.
Right. So even framing the decision in terms of, here's what previous generations did for you. Now think about what can you do that's going to help future generations. Another sort of key variable that we've looked at more recently is what we call death priming or mortality salience. So you get people to think about the fact that they're not always going to be here. And that causes people to feel a little bit anxious and to, really want to, extend their mortality a little bit, at least symbolically. So even just having them read a newspaper article about a plane crash gets them thinking about mortality, and that will promote more intergenerational beneficence.
Well, tell us about the test that you did and the results that you got, having people read different articles and then asking them kind of the same questions about what they'll do with their money.
Okay. So in a recent experiment, we had people read two different subjects read either about a plane crash, which is our mortality salience condition or treatment, or just sort of a control condition where people read about a mathematician who had solved a problem. And then they made an allocation of money between themselves and a charitable organization. And that organization was either one that was going to make a difference in the present versus one that would affect people in the future. And what we found was that in the control condition, people were more likely to give more money to the charity that was having an immediate effect. So that would reflect what we would expect based on traditional theories of sort of intertemporal choice. But under conditions of mortality salience, when people read about the plane crash, they were actually more likely to allocate the money for the future than in the present, which is very remarkable because it strikingly kind of goes against intertemporal choice, which is a very pervasive phenomenon. There's a lot of research, showing that people are always going to time discount. And it kind of, we saw a reversal of that effect with our mortality salience prime.
Mortality salience for me is triggered by simply a mirror. I don't have to read anything. So, but this is an interesting phenomenon. The idea that you can actually trigger the thought about your legacy and then change behavior. What are the applications? And well, let me ask you before I ask you generally, can this work in the corporate world where famously, CEOs are looking one quarter ahead to maximize profits because their job depends on that, even if they know perhaps they're sacrificing long-term survivability for their company. Do these things work in that environment?
Well, actually, our second experiment did look at a decision that was made by – it was a hypothetical decision, but we had people play the role of a VP of operations in an organization who was allocating a new kind of efficient energy source between themselves, their own organization, and then we had them allocate between another subsidiary either in the present or the future. And we used a comparable Mortelli Salience Prime, and we did replicate the effect. So certainly this is something that we would like to have an impact also in organizations and would be relevant for trying to get organizational decision makers to make more sustainable decisions that sort of promote the success of the organization over time beyond their own existence in the organization. And I do think organizational decision makers are very concerned about their legacy.
That's interesting. You know. And so they might make that trade-off. But at the public policy level then, how can you see this being applied at a policy level? If you're asking a lot of people to stop using a particular energy now, coal is cheap, folks, but we're going to switch over to this more expensive one because ultimately it's the best thing for us to do. Mm-hmm. Could you ever make a kind of grand, at a mass scale, make this work? And I've given you 30 seconds to answer.
Okay. So, I mean, one of the implications is that the framing of the decision can kind of go beyond ethical norms. This is the right thing to do, and more at, what kind of impact do you want to have 20 or 40 or 100 years from now? And you have the power to affect the experience of other people far into the future. So it kind of changes the nature of the kind of decision you're trying to get them to make to here's the right thing to do versus you can have an impact in trying to frame it that way.
Kim, thanks so much for talking with us. Fascinating research.
Thank you.
Kim Wade Benzoni is an associate professor of management and a scholar at the Center on Leadership and Ethics at the Fuqua School of Business at Duke University. Just ahead, we revisit the Nicaraguan Civil War. Photographer Kevin Konishi joins us on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.